is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague and co-pilot, David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. And we're very pleased to welcome Eric Berger, the senior space correspondent for Ars Technica, which I highly recommend. It's always covering the AI story now, and that helps me a deal, but the space story is not done. Eric is the author of two books I assigned to all of you. Liftoff, Elon Musk and the Desperate Early Days That Launched SpaceX. Very exciting, especially the Hollywood moment when Musk says, go for it. Okay, and most recently, Reentry, SpaceX, Elon Musk and the Reusable Rockets That Launched the Second Space Age. Reusable is everything, and we're about to talk about it one more time in the course of talking about a failure, or what SpaceX calls an RUD. Eric, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much for joining. Test 8, like Test 7, was destroyed. Test 8, like Test 7, did have a great success. The capture of the first stage, the Super Heavy, with the so-called chopsticks. It's a spectacular moment. And before we get to the RUD of Starship, three times out of four, they've managed that. That's astonishing, Eric. Are they astonished? Good evening to you.
I think that they considered the first stage capture the more difficult engineering challenge of this project. And so, yeah, I think they SpaceX is probably a little bit surprised that they've been so successful. I think they were on track to reuse the second booster they caught in an upcoming flight this spring before the latest failure of the upper stage. And so I think that could be delayed. But yes, they're really having a lot of success with this massive first stage of the Starship rocket. The problems are really with the upper stage.
David, you have a question for Eric.
Are they planning anytime soon to reuse a captured first stage?
It had been possibly for Flight 9 before the problem with this last test flight. I don't know that they're going to move off of that, but I suggest that they're going to really want to minimize the chances of having issues on the upcoming test flight. So I think they probably will use a new stage, but reuse is coming soon for the first stage.
Let's remind ourselves and the audience what reusability is all about. This is a big concept that my understanding existed in the 20th century, and NASA had the concept, others might have as well, but did not pursue. What is reusability, Eric, and why? Do we know why NASA didn't pursue it? Because that is the reason SpaceX is so competitive. It cuts down costs.
Right. So reuse is essentially taking rockets and applying airport-like operations to them. So, you know, you fly in an airplane, it lands, it goes through the gate, people unload, new people get on, it's refueled, it takes off and flies again. That's the idea you'd like to get to with rockets. Now, they're more complicated, and it's more challenging. But with the Falcon 9 rocket, SpaceX has approached that with flying boosters dozens of times and making the turnaround time weeks instead of months. NASA did try reuse out with the space shuttle for 30 years, as you know, John, and flew some of those orbiters dozens of times. The problem is they never got to rapid or low-cost reuse with the shuttle. The flights, you know, still cost on the order of $1 billion per mission. It required a standing army of thousands of people to turn those vehicles around. So it's not just reuse that's important. It's rapid and low-cost is a big factor as well. And that's what SpaceX is starting to achieve with Falcon 9.
David, you have a question.
Are any of the other rocket builders, the competitors to SpaceX, as far along in reusability as SpaceX?
No, everyone is at least a decade behind SpaceX when it comes to reuse. But all of the new companies coming along have reuse as part of their business plan. Blue Origin for reusable rocket. Rocket Lab wants to reuse the first stage of its Neutron vehicle. Relativity Space just updated its plans for Terran R to reusable. Stoke Space is trying to reuse the entire rocket. So that is definitely the future, but no one has ever reflown or even, you know, vertically landed a rocket yet like SpaceX has done.
I read that Ariane 6 is now testing, and it is not reusability. This is the European Space Agency. So is there a practical case for not using reusability, or is this just old-fashioned of them to stick with what worked in the 20th century?
Well, the Ariane 6 was really, the decision on its design was made back in 2014. So at that time, reuse wasn't quite the certain thing that it appears today. And I think there was also a thought that if you're only going to launch a rocket 8 or 10 times a year in Europe, then do you really need a reusable vehicle? There were also, frankly, workforce concerns. If you were reusing rockets, then what would you do with the people you had building your rockets? For complicated reasons, Europe did not choose the path of reusability a decade ago. I think future vehicles in Europe will have at least some elements of reuse involved.
All right. We've talked of the specifics of the success of SpaceX. We've given all the bouquets that we have because we're turning now to the test number 8 and Starship's disassembly in orbit. What happened? Similar to test number 7. Do I say correctly, Eric, that the event of the anomaly that took down both tests happened approximately the same time into the flight? Is that correct?
Yes, it was several minutes into the burn of the second stage as it was on its way into orbit. It didn't reach orbit, of course. And at both times, the rocket broke apart essentially between Florida and the Bahamas and Turks and Caicos. And so both times it rained debris down on those areas. There were, you know, dozens of flight diversions and pretty serious impacts, I think, that are not good for SpaceX or for the Federal Aviation Administration or for anyone else. I think it has to be especially disconcerting because it was the similar problem, same time with the upgraded version of the Starship vehicle, which really raises some questions about the viability of that vehicle's propulsion system.
David, you have a question.
How long of a delay are they considering before number 9, or are they even talking about that yet? And what does this do to Artemis, because they want to use this rocket and do the human lander? So is this taking all of SpaceX's time to fix, or how are they dividing time to deal with all this?
Those are two great questions, David. First of all, Elon Musk has said that it's only going to be 4 to 6 weeks before the next test flight. Quite frankly, I'd be shocked if that's the case. I think that they're going to stand down for a while longer to really understand this issue and make sure they've solved it. It would not surprise me to see them not launch again until sometime this summer. As for NASA and the Artemis program, it's a big concern. NASA's most recent adjustment in schedule a couple of months ago was to say that the Artemis landing, this is the first human landing on the moon, was delayed till September of 2027 or sometime in 2027. I mean, it's very safe to say that's completely off the table now. And we're looking at, the day-for-day delays with Starship now versus, human landing on the moon. So I think NASA has a right to be very concerned. I think it does lock in continued missions on NASA's Space Launch System rocket for at least Artemis 2 and Artemis 3, whereas before there had been some consideration of maybe moving off those vehicles. Now the uncertainty around Starship really changes that equation, I think.
Eric, I want to make certain I have the language correctly here. SpaceX is testing the first stage Super Heavy and the second stage Starship. However, the Starship that was a success in the early tests, it's not the same Starship that was just destroyed over the Bahamas, nor was number 7, the test 7, the same. Is that correct? These are different versions of Starship.
That's correct. It's an upgraded version, well, supposedly upgraded version of the vehicle to increase its performance. And it had a number of modifications, but basically it was designed to really increase the payload capacity of Starship to orbit. They want to eventually get to the point where these vehicles can take more than 100 metric tons to low Earth orbit. And so they need to continue, working and improving the performance of the vehicle. Along the way, they made some changes, which they haven't really specified too greatly, to the propulsion system, the lines, the fuel lines, and sort of the management and arrangement of the engines in the upper stage. And clearly some of those changes are causing problems. And that's one of the reasons why I think, you know, in answer to my question, my answer to David's question, I do think they're going to step back now and really make sure they understand the problem and go ahead. You know, I had multiple people telling me that after Flight 7, there was a ton of pressure on SpaceX employees to really get Flight 8 out of the gate as soon as possible. And now it really seems like that must have been a mistake.
Eric Berger is the author most recently of Reentry, SpaceX, Elon Musk, and the Reusable Rockets That Launched the Second Space Age. We're in it. And the first book, Elon Musk and the Desperate Early Days That Launched SpaceX, that's got everything in it. That's Mickey Rooney. Let's hold a fair in your dad's barn and make some costumes. That's what that one is. I recommend it highly to understand where we are now. When we come back, what is to be done? Eric Berger, senior space correspondent for Ars Technica. David Livingston, he is the host of The Space Show, Dr. Space himself. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.